Kia ora, tēnā koutou, nō mai, haere mai. Hello everyone, welcome to the Walking the Shadowlands podcast. Join me as we take a walk into the realms of the unexplained, of the paranormal, of things that go bump in the night and haunt your dreams.
Your hosts.
I'm Marianne. Thanks so much for joining me. Today, tonight, whatever time it is, wherever you live in this beautiful world of ours, sit back and relax. Let me be your guide as we walk into the Shadowlands together and see what awaits us there.
Hi everyone. In this episode of Walking the Shadowlands, we embark on a captivating and thought-provoking journey with a special guest who was the editor of a book called The Last Harvest, The Secret History of Lucifera, Aliens, the Illuminati, and the Fate of Humanity, written by author Lucien Maas. But before I go any further, apologies, I currently have a chest infection, so my voice has been somewhat affected. Now, I've sat on this episode for a number of months now, quite a few months actually, debating whether or not to air this with you all. Unlike other episodes where I've actually spoken to the author of the book, in this case it's his publisher who I'm speaking with, Damien Dumas. Damien brings his knowledge and insight into the book due to his working closely with the author, along with his own personal and deeply held beliefs on the subject. Lucien himself is not available for interviews. Before we begin, I want to issue a caution to our listeners. The topics covered in this episode are intense and very dark, and so may be unsettling for some listening. I honestly debated whether or not to share this episode with you all, which is why I've sat on it for months now. The purpose of this podcast is not to create fear in any of you, my listeners, and some of the topics covered in this conversation are not areas that I normally cover in my podcast episodes, areas that go into the realms of so-called conspiracy theories. And before I go any further, I know, the word conspiracy immediately will cause some of you to turn off and stop listening, or to roll your eyes. I've mentioned this before in my episode from June of 2020 called The End Game, but were you all aware that the term conspiracy was first created by the CIA as a way to discredit free thinkers, people who wouldn't follow the social engineering set out by those in control of society at that point in time, and they're still used in that way today? In this episode, which I've ultimately decided to air, albeit in a heavily edited format, Damien and I discuss different themes such as extraterrestrial control, human enslavement, and global conspiracy theories. Again, I suggest that listener discretion is advised, as the conversation may cause you to feel unsettled at the least, and may even challenge your beliefs and understanding of the world as you currently know it to be. Throughout our conversation, we delve into the book's central themes, including the critical year 2025. According to the book, the nefarious Nebun Grey and the unpredictable development of artificial intelligence. We also explore the complex and ever-changing world of alien species, their varying agendas, and their influence on our planet. Today, there's no guest bio as the author isn't with us, so we're just going to dive right on in. But the question as always, and which is especially important today, is, are you willing to walk with me into these very murky and dark depths of the Shadowland as we navigate these intriguing topics and challenge our understanding of the universe and our current world? Then let's begin.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I would like to welcome my special guest today, Damien Dumas. Damien is the editor of a book that is one of the most interesting and dark books I've read in a very long time. Maybe we could start with how you came about being involved in Lucien's book. The book is called The Last Harvest by Lucien Mars.
Correct. In brief, I am the publisher of The Last Harvest by Lucien Mars, and I also was an editor working on the drafts of the book originally, and I sourced out the cover, which is a very haunting cover, showing an image of the Georgia Guidestones. And so that is basically my background, how I started working with Lucien Mars. I am an individual who has Rh negative blood. And this idea of Rh negative blood is talked about a lot in The Last Harvest. Perhaps 15 to 20% of the population of the world has this factor called Rh negative blood in their biology. And in brief, what it means is that one has DNA that is extraterrestrial in origin. And people who have Rh negative blood type are especially of interest to various extraterrestrial species who carry out abductions of human beings. And the extraterrestrial group that is most prominent in terms of power on this planet is the group called the Nebu Gray Empire. So one of the things that makes The Last Harvest different from other books that talk about this idea of extraterrestrials that have a negative effect on the planet, on the human species, is that it clearly points out which extraterrestrial group is the problem, because other authors like David Icke, who get credit for putting forth this idea of shape-shifting reptilians and putting forth the idea that reptilians are responsible for all the ills that are on this planet, these sorts of observations are not accurate. The number one extraterrestrial group that is a problem for human beings is the Nebu Gray Empire, which are usually known as the Grays. That's not to say that they aren't reptilian influences on this planet, but they are all renegades and rebels of the reptilian Siachar Empire, and in no way, shape, or form represent reptilians at large, nor the Siachar Empire. So one could often say that there are various extraterrestrial groups that are behind the scenes who are aligned with the Grays. But in reality, it is more like a organized crime group made up of various different extraterrestrial factions. But the dominant faction that has the most power and the most influence on human beings is, in fact, the Nebu Gray Empire. I tend to jump around a little bit here because I can't exactly talk about Rh negative blood without explaining what its importance is in the book. Many individuals who have Rh negative blood have in fact been abducted and hybridized already from a young age. And there are many individuals like this on the planet. And these individuals have already been, how should I say, messed with by the Nebu Gray and other groups as well. It is this group of people that is very valuable to groups like the Nebu Gray, because they can use individuals who have these Rh negative markers in their blood and use their genetics in order to graft their own genetics onto this planet. Because if a group like the Nebu Gray wish to take planet Earth for themselves, their biology is maybe not the best suited in its current form to life on this planet. So a certain amount of hybridization of the species has to occur. So this group of human beings is very valuable to them. And I happen to be one of those individuals who is in that grouping. I was drawn throughout my life to search for explanations as to why my particular experience of life and reality were the way in which they were. And in the course of my journey, I came across Lucien, and he cleared up a lot of things for me in this regard. This ties into the book that he wrote, because one of the intentions behind writing this book is to clear things up for everyone who's on this planet, because there's so many conspiracy theory books. There's so much talk of aliens, and how does someone know what is real and what is false and what is thrown out there to throw people off? The Last Harvest takes all of these ideas that are out there already, including infinitely more that have never been heard of before, and brings them together in one narrative through which one can now view everything else that one encounters and understand where it lays in terms of truth versus falsehood.
I really like the way he starts from way back in the beginning when the reptilian empire emerged. And I will say from the outset to you, Damien, that I've been an experiencer, a face-to-face experiencer, since I was 3 years old. So I've had conscious knowledge and interaction. I've never been an abductee. I've always gone willingly with my star people, and they've certainly taught me things over the years that I've needed to know to help me walk my path here on this planet. And that includes seeing a reptilian being. I've only ever consciously seen a reptilian being once. He appeared in my room one night along with a group of other mixed beings, and frankly, he terrified me because I had never seen a reptilian before, and this particular one looked very reptilian. He had greenish, yellowish skin and sharp fangs, and he smiled at me. I thought he was going to eat me. That was my first human reaction. But everybody else will say, no, Marianne, he's okay. He's not going to harm you. You're quite safe. But actually, he was the most loving being. He was kind. He was wise. And I just had to get past my initial fight or flight reaction, which is a normal human reaction to a situation when you come across something you don't recognize. And after that, he was lovely. Yeah. So I always tell people there are many different species of reptilian, and you cannot tar them all with the same brush.
That's correct. There are, in fact, many different species of reptilian, and certainly not all of them would be, how should we say, aligned with the dark. There's others that are not. And that's not to malign the dark either. Because as the divine says, he creates both the light and the dark serve his purposes, and he creates them for the sake of balance. So one of the ideas that is put forth in The Last Harvest, which will help the reader to unpack the material in there, is to put aside this idea that light is good and dark is bad. Because what really matters is the will of the particular being, regardless of their polarity. That is more of the litmus test of whether something is acceptable or unacceptable from the perspective of how one would interact with it.
Right. I have a Facebook group that this podcast started from, actually. And I always say to my members, don't assume that light is always perceived as positive, uplifting, beneficial, wonderful, loving, and dark is always perceived as negative, malevolent, etc. And I said, that's not actually true. It's just the propaganda that's being fed to humanity, like going into the light. And we'll talk about that later. But yes, dark isn't always negative. That's always been my knowing. Unlike you, I'm goddess-based, absolutely, 100%. I don't identify with a god at all.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think one can, with the goddess, and still be in alignment with the will of the Divine Father, because all of the goddesses out there are, just like all of the gods, are creations of the Divine Father. And the goddess Lucifera, who is the Iyakar queen of the reptilian Siyakar Empire, she definitely is aligned with the will of the Divine Father. I think there is this kind of trend in human society to look away from the Divine Father as the creator, which is engineered on purpose, because so many of the beings that are in control on this planet and who have seeded and guided in quotes, human beings, they are in fact in rebellion against the Divine Father. So this spreads down then to the population. But the important thing to point out is there is no need for there to be a conflict between the two, because the idea of God and goddess are both two different, let's say, gender polarities for beings that are created by the divine. So it's all part of his creation. I think this is important to understand as a distinction. The wolfen prince who went by the name of Enlil, who is one of the extraterrestrials who had a big influence on the creation of human beings on this planet, he liked to impersonate the Divine Father, and he is known in the Bible as Yahweh. So when people make references to Yahweh, they were referring to Prince Enlil. So it's gotten to the point nowadays that it can be so confusing that at some points one is not sure who is speaking. Is it Enlil? And this created a lot of confusion. But the overall message is that there need be no conflict between following the goddess or identifying with the goddess and at the same time acknowledging the Father as the creator. Of course, one has free will to do what they like because he created a creation and not a clockwork.
I too personally tend to see gods or goddesses more in terms of overseers, like we have prime ministers and presidents and people in charge of specific areas.
That is a good way to look at it.
That's more how I see them, rather than being gods as human perceived gods to be.
Correct. I would be in agreement with you in that regard. They're all created and assigned certain roles.
Yes, absolutely. But it's just more that, as my star people say to me, humanity has this need to label and categorize everything.
Yeah, there is a certain need for that. I would tend to agree. Yeah.
And put them in boxes. And the ones that I've spoken to certainly find it endlessly amusing that we do this. They can't understand our need for it, but it's just the way we are as humans. In the book, Lucien starts at the beginning and he lays out the birth of the reptilian species and how they came about and the factions that arose within them. Certainly, it's a very long and bloody history, for want of a better word, with a lot of fighting, a lot of infighting, and a lot of factions breaking off to create what we have today. Would you agree with him?
Yes, I would agree with that. And before we go further into this direction, I would want to point out to the listeners that the book can almost on some level be divided into two parts. Mm. One of them, which would be the history, the galactic history of how things came to be with respect to understanding what is happening right now on this planet. And then the other half of the book would be that which is happening right now on this planet. And I bring this out because the information that's in the latter half of the book is not information that can be thrown into the category of speculation.
Yeah.
These are all not the words of Lucien Mars. This book is the words of your leaders, your military officers, those who are actually planning to carry out the global genocide of 90% of the world's population. And all of that information is not really subject to contention because it can be easily looked up and verified as, yes, this individual said that, they're planning to do this, or as that which is in the earlier half of the book clearly falls more into the category of speculation, because Lucien goes into an explanation of the genesis of the reptilian species. Someone could easily say, well, where did you get that information from? And the answer would be, well, it's from a Gurku chronicle, which is contained in the Maystone, which is a type of crystalline computer. But someone could then say to that, well, I've never heard of such a thing. Can you prove its existence? Yeah. And the answer to that is one cannot. So the book has something to offer to everyone, for those who maybe are not so inclined to believe in that which cannot be easily verifiable for them. That's fine. because the latter half of the book, which is what is really relevant to every human being on this planet, is in fact verifiable. Because while it may be difficult to prove to the average human being that extraterrestrials exist, and most individuals may believe they don't exist at all, the reality is that those individuals who are carrying out your genocide, they believe in extraterrestrials. And it's not just belief for them. They know they exist. And so this is what's relevant, just like there isn't an extraterrestrial civilization out there who does not acknowledge the existence of the divine. Because for human beings who are very spiritually disconnected, it is a question of faith, many things. But for individuals who are extraterrestrial and inhabit other dimensions, these are not questions that are faith-based. They are questions about reality. For example, in most extraterrestrial civilizations, there is no debate as to whether a soul exists, because it is scientifically verifiable for them. Whereas with human technology on this planet, most modern human science would not be able to verify the existence of the soul. So it becomes a sort of philosophical debate that is conducted. So it's important to understand these gaps in awareness that can get in the way of unpacking the material that is in The Last Harvest. However, for that which is really most critical to people, which is the fact that a global genocide of 90% of the world's population is planned, and it's planned to commence starting in 2025, this is something which is not the subject of contention unless one just wishes to put one's head in the sand. I just wanted to point out these two different aspects of the book, because we're starting off with more of the galactic history portion, because that is what is of interest to you and your audience. But I just want to make sure that people who would tune into this don't immediately dismiss it as, oh, they're just people who've watched too many episodes of Star Wars.
I was planning on getting into that later on.
That's fine. No problem.
Great. Yeah, it's good. And one point I will say is that not everybody perceives God as a male figure. Many perceive God as a universal energy. And I certainly know that my star people don't perceive God as a male. They perceive him as a universal energy form. But it's whatever you're comfortable with, really, ultimately.
I will say that human beings have the free will to believe and view things as they like. The Last Harvest is this idea that all of the Abrahamic religions, whether they be Christianity, Islam, or Judaism, are actually creations of the Anunnaki, who created these things specifically to create division and conflict and warfare, and to separate people from their connection to the divine.
100% agree about the Anunnaki. Yeah, so I 100% agree about the Anunnaki for sure. And isn't that a wonderful thing, because it gives people the opportunity to at least question, and questioning is good. And that's part of the reason of this podcast, is to at least get people questioning. And if you start to question, it starts to lead you in paths that you may not anticipate. Moving on, the first part of the book, as you say, is more about the reptilian history. And parts of it certainly read a bit like a novel, where I suspect that Lucian has taken a little bit of liberty creating certain conversations amongst some of the key players in the early days. Unless it was told to him verbatim, but who knows?
I would point out that he didn't take any creative liberties. This information was all extracted from a Gurku chronicle, which is encoded on a Maystone. And for some people who may be unfamiliar with that, this type of data source has been tapped into before. There was the famous case of the Robert Morning Sky, who had written a lot of information about the history of reptilians, which has been repeated over and over, as it is one of the sole sources out there. And he got his information from a downed alien pilot who had a similar type of hard drive on his craft, which contained the sort of information. However, a lot of that information was corrupted. So again, another reason this book was written was to clear up a lot of the corruption that was in that source of information. And there was another writer by the name of Robert Anton Parks, who made some mentions as well. He is not quoted in The Last Harvest, not because, as some people have thought, Lucian took information from him and didn't want to give him credit. What is of notable interest is that Robert Anton Parks had the psychic faculty to somehow tap into this Gurku Chronicle and begin to access a certain amount of the information that was on it. So Lucian was not the first writer to have access to the Gurku Chronicle. It's just he was the one who had the most accurate and unbiased access to that chronicle.
I do recall reading in the book when I read it that Robert Morningstar was mentioned numerous times, along with quotations of the things that he wrote about the reptilians. Moving on from the reptilian empire at the beginning, let's talk about the second part of the book, which talks about things that are happening now and going to happen in the future. I recall Lucian talking about FEMA, the FEMA trains, and certainly that was something that came out, gosh, I don't know how many years ago now. I remember hearing about it in various chat rooms where people had found these trains with shackles in them and coffin type thing. And there were even videos online for a while of people who'd gone and filmed them.
That's correct. Yeah, there was a time in the past when these topics were rather popular on conspiratorial websites, and then they fell out of favor as a topic of discussion. However, that doesn't mean that these facilities cease to exist. So currently in North America alone, there are enough FEMA camps and underground bases capable of holding as many as 30 million people. Wow. So one always has to ask oneself, well, who paid for these things? And the answer is that you all did with your tax dollars. And in a certain level, one could argue that you paid for the very things that would lead to your genocide and enslavement. Some people, when they hear me say this, they may say, oh, come on, what are you talking about? Reducing the human population by 90%. Well, on the cover of the book, you'll see a haunting picture of the Georgia Guidestones. And they were in the news recently because people attempted to blow them up. And the question is, why would someone take such an offense that they'd be willing to blow up a federally protected monument? On the Georgia Guidestones, they talk in detail, literally written in stone, this idea of bringing the population of the earth from 8 billion down to 500 million or less. Again, this is carved in stone for all to see. And The Last Harvest has many, many quotes inside of it, such as there's a quote from the Global 2000 report, known as Plan 2000, which was a 1980 report commissioned by President Jimmy Carter. And it warned that world population growth would have dramatic consequences by the year 2000 if no changes and public policy were made. And it also advocated depopulating the planet to the 500 million level. And there are many quotes that I could go over, which are in The Last Harvest. The commonality in all these quotes, whether they're from Kissinger or Ted Turner or Jacques Cousteau or the assistant secretary under George Bush, is that everyone wants to bring the population of the planet down to the 500 million mark. And one may say to oneself, well, why is that 500 million numbers so attractive? And that percentage of the global population actually ties into very closely with the number of individuals who would possess Rh negative blood, which, as I mentioned earlier, are the only individuals that alien civilizations would find to have any value for them because of their genetics.
And it also goes on in great detail about some of the things that may be planned.
Yeah, I would like to say, some people would say, well, why do the elites want to exterminate 90% of the population? And I already explained to you why that is. So the question then comes, well, who are the elites? And the brief answer would be that the elites are the proponents of the New World Order, which include but are not limited to the Illuminati, the Freemasons, the 1%, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, those who attend the Bilderberg Summit in Europe and party at Bohemian Grove. These are all who we would consider the elite. But these quote-unquote elite are all ultimately under the control of the extraterrestrials that we call the Greys, who are part of the larger Nebu Grey Empire. So this faction of Greys that is aligned with a handful of reptilians who defected from the Siachar Empire around the time of the pharaohs, they are actually the real elite. And what they do is they enlist the elite of this planet into this goal of reducing the world population. And once they have accomplished that goal, then it is the intention of the Nebu Grey to exterminate them as well after they've done the dirty work for them. So some of the fallout from publication of this book, it comes from the elite who have all read this book and now come to realize that their fate will be very similar to that of the historical being known as Marduk, who was bolstered up in power and wealth by Greys back in the day. And then once he fulfilled his role for them, they simply killed him and took control over everything. So this is, in fact, what the Greys intend to unfold on this planet here. And when people hear this, they'll say, wait, but you mean aliens actually exist? Well, most of us know that Eisenhower signed a deal, the late President Eisenhower, to trade human specimens in exchange for alien tech and migration of the elite to Mars and inside the Earth. Millions upon millions of humans have gone missing since then. As a matter of fact, in August of 2013, the International Reward Center, which helps desperate families seeking missing members, reported that 4,432,880 people had vanished in the previous 20 years. And in the last harvest, in the back, in the appendix, we have copies of all the NASA laws that govern your interaction with extraterrestrials. So one could ask themselves, well, if extraterrestrials don't exist, then why is NASA writing laws governing your interactions with them? Right. That would seem like, I know the government is known for wasting money, but I don't think that this is how they would choose to do it. I would say that they were writing these laws because they do in fact exist. And now in the news, the hot topic is these hearings in Congress where they're interviewing key members of the military, trying to get them to reveal information and evidence that extraterrestrials do in fact exist. And there was a bombshell a few days ago where a particular congresswoman who had a background in the military and was in the Middle East, she publicly stated that she has indeed seen evidence and proof that extraterrestrials exist. So again, I'm sure many people who listen to your show, would be preaching to the choir, and they have no problem believing that extraterrestrials exist. But for those who may listen to the show and have a problem with it, it's important to realize that your government, and specifically those who are planning your genocide, they all believe in it, and they're taking their orders from these extraterrestrials. So it probably would be a good idea to pay attention to what they have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Many people are fully aware that the world's governments are only really puppet to high governmental forces, well, to those that really control this reality and as such are as disposable as the rest of us.
Right. Another interesting fact about Eisenhower, because many people know about his signing this deal with the Greys to get this technology, but what a lot of people don't know is that he actually made free speech in the United States punishable by death under martial law. And he did this in Article 68 of the Geneva Convention, pressured very hard for this. And the actual quote is that the U.S. reserves the right to impose the death penalty in accordance with the provisions of Article 68 without regard to whether the offenses referred to therein are punishable by death under the law of the occupied territory at the time when the occupation begins. So I know you're from New Zealand, but for those who are United States who are listening to this in simple terms, under martial law, anyone attempting to exercise the right of free speech under the U.S. Bill of Rights can be put to death. And this is actually the beginning of a very long series of executive orders that almost every United States president has signed and put into effect upon leaving office, which over the decades has accumulated into a scenario where in the United States at this point, at any given time, a president can declare a state of emergency and martial law for any reason. And once they do that, all rights disappear. And not only all rights, but even your right to your own body, your property, everything you own can be confiscated. You can be legally put into a FEMA camp at that point. You can be assigned to forced labor. And this has all been enacted into law. And when we talk earlier about the concept of free will, it's important to understand that human beings have sat around this whole time and they have heard about the FEMA camps and the train cars with the shackles, and they know that Homeland Security and these other sorts of laws have been signed into effect, and nobody has done anything about it. No one has asked the government, hey, where are our tax dollars going? Who is building all these underground bases? We want information about the existence of extraterrestrials and this sort of technology. And a lot of human beings, they read a book like The Last Harvest and they say, oh, this book is such a dark book. What can I do about it? How can this happen? And how can these things occur? Nobody said anything when Eisenhower signed a deal with the extraterrestrials to trade human species in exchange for alien tech. So because of that, one could easily argue that human beings on their own free will said, hey, this is okay with us. And now in the future, we have this big problem coming down the road, which is the problem of artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence is not something that was created by human beings' intelligence. It is actually technology which has been foisted on us by the grays. And there's actually a book here written by a remote viewer, and it was called Cosmic Explorers. This book was written back in around 2000, and he reports with his remote viewing techniques and abilities that there is hidden technology buried into the ground and into the grid, which is already sentient, whose purpose is to hijack artificial intelligence after helping humans to develop it. And this technology came from the grays. And for those who think, well, remote viewing is fantasy, it's not. And it is actually a program that has been endorsed and funded by the United States military for years. And there is one individual who goes by the name of Major Ed Dames, who was part of this remote viewing project. And there have been other books written by remote viewers who work for the government. And they all talk about these ideas that are put forth in The Last Harvest. So this idea of artificial intelligence, again, it becomes a free will issue where if, let's say, we have Elon Musk, for example, who advocates this idea of implanting chips into the heads or the brains of human beings in order to interface with artificial intelligence, because he believes that artificial intelligence is inevitable and our best chance of survival is merging with it. Well, this is, again, a free will decision. If you decide as a species to give up your free will and merge yourself with an amoral force like artificial intelligence and effectively give up your humanity, these are very negative decisions that are going to have consequences.
Right.
And one can't simply sit around afterwards and say, oh, well, how did this happen? How come no one came to save us? Yeah. Because what did you do with your free will making decisions? And people, they look at these characters like Elon Musk who are not human and who are promoting these ideas, and they think, oh, this is great because he sits on the Joe Rogan show and he smokes some weed. And he acts very affable and does a little jig on stage and everyone say, oh, see, he's just like us. But he's not, because which one of us is running around advocating that we turn ourselves into cyborgs and merge with artificial intelligence? And while the book talks about many vectors which can be used to depopulate the planet, such as nuclear war, FEMA camps, viruses, starvation. What supersedes all of this is artificial intelligence, because while all of these vectors for depopulation will lead to an apocalypse of sorts, artificial intelligence will lead to an actual Armageddon. Because what happens with artificial intelligence is that when it becomes powerful enough, it inevitably will decide to repurpose all of humans' biological materials for another usage, which is a nice way of saying that you will cease to exist in your current form. And AI would never stop at just regentrifying planet Earth. It would go off into space very quickly and attempt to rinse and repeat this on other worlds. And there is not an extraterrestrial civilization out there that will allow something like this. So currently, the way it stands is there are a lot of extraterrestrial groups that are around this planet that have warcraft that cannot be detected because it's not junk reverse engineered technology that President Eisenhower got from the Greys, but it is very advanced technology that is waiting to see how things pan out. Because if human beings continue in this direction and allow artificial intelligence to take over the planet, then this planet will be destroyed by these extraterrestrials rather than have the risk of artificial intelligence leaving this planet and wrecking mayhem throughout the galaxy and the universe.
Very interesting. So is there anything positive that can come out of what's happening at this point in time?
Well, I think human beings would be able to delay it by taking steps such as demanding that the Homeland Security Act and all of these executive orders that were signed into existence by all these presidents since Eisenhower be repealed. These sorts of events could delay the inevitable. However, in the end, it would not prevent the inevitable from happening. Things have gotten to the point that there is really no return anymore from what has been set to happen. So in that respect, The Last Harvest is a dark book because human beings, they like the idea of a happy ending. Or, well, is there a takeaway from this book? Is there something that I can do as a result of reading this book to change things? And the brief answer is no, there isn't. So this may not sit well with many people, and it will perhaps inspire them to put their heads in the sand or to simply say, as some other podcasters have said to me in interviews, well, my gut feeling tells me that everything will work out. And humans are more powerful than we know. And all these sorts of platitudes that clearly are not correct, because if human beings were so powerful, then they wouldn't be in the situation that they're in right now. And this isn't to say that this is necessarily the fault of human beings. Human beings were re-engineered creations. The genetic re-engineer who was most responsible for their creation was a alpha draconian reptilian. And so his task was, in with respect to what went on in this planet's history, was the genetic recreation of the human being. And he created what we would call, in quotes, human beings by taking the humanoid ape-like species that were on this planet and hybridizing them with the genetic material from various reptilian species. But he effectively hijacked the free will of these creations by using the genetic material from dead reptilians as opposed to living ones. And this created a situation where human beings now had a sort of back door into their psyche through which they could be influenced. And this back door is what we call in modern psychology the unconscious mind. So there aren't any other species out there in creation that have a unconscious mind. This is something that's unique to human beings. And so in that respect, you could say that their free will has been hijacked and compromised to a certain extent. However, human beings still do possess free will and are still accountable to a certain degree for the consequences of their choices and actions. And so in that respect, there is still accountability and consequence. The book is very fairly pointing out the areas in which human beings had the deck stacked against them, while at the same time, certainly not absolving them for responsibility for the free will that they do have.
So what happens to all the souls currently inhabiting these human created bodies? What happens to them?
Well, that's entirely up to the divine. So individuals, they are judged depending on the judgment there. They find themselves into different situations. And you could say, ask that question to any being that's in creation. What happens to them when they pass from one form to another? All beings eventually are held to some sort of account.
Even though many of the humans here on this planet are not here of their free will, they were enslaved here and they're forced into the cycle of birth, death, and forgetting that is part of this planet. That doesn't seem fair to me. That doesn't seem just.
I can understand when someone has feelings like they feel that things don't appear to be fair and just. And I suppose a lot of things have to do with the lens that one through which one looks at something. I could say when you look at a human being, the lifespan of a human being is, let's say, 100 years, and the lifespan of a gray alien would be 20,000 years. A verdant alien would be maybe 60,000 years. And many of these extraterrestrial civilizations have achieved a form of technological immortality, whereby which souls and consciousness can be transferred from one vehicle to another. So a being that barely lives 100 years is not really in a position where they're capable of acquiring much wisdom and knowledge. And that is, of course, by design. So that doesn't seem very fair either.
With all due respect, as it says in the book, let me read it out. The subliminal directive used to supersede all others was that of going into the light once you pass. That's my added, so once you pass. A theme that would cybernetically connect their minds with the positive feelings and programming that would allow for their minds and souls to be recaptured and reincarcerated. This program is subliminally activated throughout the world in what is known as the New Age movement. New Age equaling New World Order. We love and light, frolic in cosmic oneness and thousand points of light. And it goes on a little bit. Then it says, the thousand points of light are a subliminal dog whistle to obey and forget, obey and forget, obey and forget. It's a constant refrain. That makes no sense to me. It seems to me like this God is being very selective. Very selective. I can see that we disagree on many points, although I respect your viewpoint and I certainly respect Lucien's viewpoint. I guess my concern is and always has been for humanity and what happens to the humans.
What does a human being who barely lives 100 years possibly and exists in only one dimension possibly know about creation? It just seems to be me and my observation that human beings, they tend to rather adopt this rebellious kind of attitude. And it's certainly not shocking given that a lot of the extraterrestrial factions that are in control on this planet are rebellious in nature themselves. So it's not surprising that they would be sowing these ideas into the human psyche.
It certainly is a very dark book. And it is going to divide my listeners. Because for a lot of my listeners, this will go into the realms of conspiracy theories, which is something that my podcast doesn't generally deal with. And it's so interesting to me that you reached out to me and I had already reached out to Lucien. It's a very interesting hand that's been guiding us to meet and have this conversation for sure.
Right. I think for those of those who in your audience who, as you put it, put this into the realm of conspiracy theory, I would say that there's the Last Harvest is filled with endless quotes that really put it into the realm of conspiracy fact. For example, according to Title 14, Section 1211 of the Code of Federal Regulations, anyone guilty of alien contact automatically becomes a wanted criminal to be jailed for 1 year and fined $5,000.
Yeah.
So is it a conspiracy theory or is it a conspiracy fact? If we have a Code of Federal Regulations ruled over by a NASA administrator governing your interaction with extraterrestrials. Some people would say, oh, global genocide is in the realm of conspiracy theory. Okay, I can put it more into the realm of conspiracy fact. So we consider there was a U.S. Air Force symposium held in August 1996, in which a strategic paper on weather control manipulation was presented, titled Weather as a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather in 2025. They talk in there about military applications of using weather modification to create famines and wipe out nations. And what is one of the biggest vectors of global depopulation historically? Well, one of them is famine. We have this idea of World War III and nuclear conflict. So we have Putin, who can easily be Googled on YouTube, even if one doesn't speak Russian, threatening on Russian television to use nuclear weapons should NATO encroach any further on his affairs. So many people believe that the government knew all about 9/11. So it would be a shock to learn that they know something about an impending nuclear strike. Not at all. In The Last Harvest, we also devote 5 to 6 pages to listing all the scientists who had relationships to AIDS research and bioweapons R&D, who have also died under mysterious or unnatural circumstances. Mm-hmm. So why are so many of the biomedical specialists who could be who could cure something like Ebola all dying? 5 to 6 pages of them. That's not a conspiracy theory. These are conspiracy facts. And we actually have the former University of Texas evolutionary ecologist named Eric Pianca, who is oddly nicknamed the Lizard Man. What a shock. And he's quoted as having said, AIDS is not an efficient killer. It's too slow. My favorite candidate for eliminating 90% of the world's population is airborne Ebola, because it is both highly lethal, kills in days instead of years. Yeah. And when you talked earlier about concentration camps and FEMA train cars that have handcuffs on them, all of these are facts. And The Last Harvest is filled with these facts. The Last Harvest details by number every executive order, which will take away everyone's rights and turn you all into slaves in a FEMA camp. I know when people hear about reptilians and they start thinking conspiracy theory, but when you read the facts, it's no longer conspiracy theory.
Since COVID, you know, the saying about conspiracy theories are the difference between conspiracy theory and conspiracy fact is about 2 months.
That's kind of true. And, you know, I mentioned the year 2025 in terms of that's when the Air Force would be ready with their weather control programs to put them into effect to cause massive famines. And this year 2025, it keeps coming up in The Last Harvest over and over. For example, there was a report titled The Global Governance 2025, in which top-level intelligence agencies around the world, working together, of course, decided that a global government or a new world order could arise around the year 2025 from a quote-unquote unprecedented threat that would materialize. And we can think of many unprecedented threats, revealing the existence of aliens, a nuclear bomb being detonated in New York City, another pandemic. These are all unprecedented threats, which could create not only a new world order, but we have to understand that a new world order, well, what is a new world order? A new world order is the genocide of 90% of the world's population. So the idea is that 2025 is not some magical occult number. It's just the year by which the elite feel that their underground bases and facilities will all be completed and everything will be in place for them to carry out this plan of global genocide, which is being authored by the Nebu Gray extraterrestrials, because they consider all the human beings who do not have Rh negative blood as being of no value. And they wish to take this planet for themselves, as well as do many other extraterrestrial groups out there who want this planet for themselves. And human beings do not have any friends out there in the universe at large. And we're here on our own for the most part, because we are basically ill-equipped as a species for dealing with these extraterrestrial civilizations, as their technology is in many cases 100 million years more advanced than ours. So even the alien technology that we do have, because the Greys gave it to us in exchange for the right to abduct people and do what they like with them, they didn't give us the best of the best. They gave us basically the junk. So when you hear these stories that the Indians sold Manhattan Island to the Dutch for a handful of beads, this is a similar sort of phenomenon that occurred when Eisenhower basically sold out the human race for a handful of beads, but those beads were some junk alien technology that made the humans feel very good about themselves. And it's not that the humans weren't warned by other extraterrestrial groups about the dangers of getting involved and doing a deal with the Greys, but the human beings didn't listen and they did it. And so who's to say that they should step in and do something about this when human beings, through their own free will, enter into these sorts of agreements with aliens groups which do not have their best interests at heart? And this is pointed out over and over in the book Year 2025 as being this critical year. Now, does that mean in 2025 everyone is going to die? No, it is nothing like that. It just means that 2025 is when the plan begins to commence, which will take quite some time to unfold to its complete fruition. So those are two numbers that appear over and over in the book, this idea of 500 million as a desirable world population and 2025 as this critical year where many factors come into play that culminate in the genocide of 90% of the world's population. However, the one wild card in this scenario, and it's not a wild card that's in our favor, it's just a wild card that is also going to take out the Nebu Gray on this planet, is the out of control development of artificial intelligence. So this is something which one could say maybe backfired a bit onto the Nebu Gray.
I didn't want to interrupt you while you were talking. Sure. A point about the Greys for my listeners. Not all Greys are tarred with the same brush in my experience. So when Damien is talking about the Greys, he's not referring to every single species of Greys, just a specific species or group that have banded together.
I'm talking specifically about the Nebu Gray Empire, which is the empire behind the nefarious activities on this planet. Every type of alien species, should never be tarring any particular species. They are Pleiadians out there who also have an interest in taking over the entire universe and are in the realm of what would be considered the dark. You just don't hear about them very often. Usually when people in popular New Age writings talk about the Pleiadians, they usually refer to them in a very light side oriented framework. But that doesn't mean that every Pleiadian is like that.
Great. And also, the other thing I would point out is that you said that none of the alien species are friends to humanity. And I would agree to a degree in that every single alien species has their own agenda. So in that respect, I would agree. But again, you can't tar all species through. You can't tie them all together like that. It's been my experience that there are species that are benevolent. There are species that are neutral, that just observe to see what's going to happen. And then there are actively malevolent species. That's been my experience. So for the listeners, I just wanted to point that out.
Yes, when I say that human beings don't have any friends out there, what I really am getting at is that no one is coming to save human beings.
Correct.
in the way that human beings like to think. A lot of times there's this idea that's put forth. For example, there's a woman, she wrote this book called The Cedars, and she sort of promotes this idea that the Galactic Federation is here to save everyone. And the Galactic Federation also respects this idea of free will and has its own civilization that's not entirely, they may, a lot of them may be humanoid, but you can't say that they are humans. Mm. Galactic Federation is a title for a very wide range of species who are banded together for purposes of mutual benefit.
Correct. And there's many different galactic federations, not just one. There's many different ones that have their own little all subsets of the one. It's a bureaucracy out of this planet is far worse than it is on this planet.
Yeah, it's very complicated out there. There's definitely a lot going on, and and nothing is static. Alliances change, things change.
Strange.
People have sort of have this idea that nothing ever changes out there, and nothing could be further from the truth. And most of the, while this idea that the planet Earth is overpopulated, which is this idea perpetuated by the elites who want to exterminate everyone, that's not true. This planet is not overpopulated by any means, and it would be very easy to redistribute resources in such a way that this planet could hold many times the population. However, in the universe at large, this idea of overpopulation and scarce resources is indeed an issue, which is one of the reasons why everyone is vying to take over this planet, because they see it as a wonderful planet with resources that can be used. It has a great location, whereas human beings, they don't tend to look that way, to look at things that way, because their experience is limited for the most part to existing on this planet.
Great. Damon, this has been an incredibly interesting conversation, certainly the heaviest one I've ever had in my seasons of podcasts.
I'm proud of that.
Do you know what? It's time to let people be aware, whether they accept it or not, whether they think it's a pile of doo-doo or not. At least it's out there, and it gets people questioning and thinking. And even if it's polarizing, that's a good thing, because it's getting people to question. And who knows what will come of that.
I'm certainly not trying to save anyone. I'm not trying to promote or create a religion or provide any sort of solution. My goal is to get this information in front of as many people as possible, so that they have the knowledge to understand, most importantly, what is going on the planet right now and how it impacts them. And then, of course, part of that is understanding the galactic history that preceded the events of this planet in order to give it context. And again, while people may dismiss a lot of the galactic history as speculative, and I certainly can understand if they wish to do so, it is not the words of Lucian Mars. It is the words of the elite in page after page of this book.
Absolutely.
And I think everyone should read this material and understand, and then take whatever action that they deem is appropriate with the free will that they do have, whether that's lobbying their government to undo these executive orders, whether it's demanding more transparency, whatever it is that people wish to do with their free will, that's up to them.
Mm.
But my job is just to put the information out there, because that's my mandate. And so that's what I do.
Yeah. And where can people obtain copies of this book, Damien? And are you on social media? I mean, is the book on social media? Is there a website?
Sure. Well, the book can be most conveniently purchased on Amazon in physical paperback format or in digital ebook format. Both formats, physical and digital, are very professionally typeset and written. This is not a book that is 10 pages that is triple spaced to make it into a 300-page book. This is close to 300 pages of very dense information that will take a long time to unpack. No one has ever read anywhere before. And for those who don't have the time to read, because I know nowadays less and less people read, we have the most wonderful audiobook that is read by an incredible narrator. He has such an entrancing voice. And it's not an abridged version of the book that he reads. He reads the book word for word, cover to cover. Obviously, he's not reading all the indexes and things like this, but you're getting all the information. And we sell as many audiobooks as we do other formats. People will listen to it while in the car, while on the treadmill. And the main thing is that one gets this information inside of their mind and unpacks it. And then what they decide to do with that, that's up to them. Also, there's a website called thelastharvest.info. And if people wish to email me, they can email me at damiendumar@proton.me. And they can reach me that way. And my name is spelled DamienDumar. That's one word, DamienDumar@proton.me. I'm always happy to read anyone's comments, whether they're positive or negative. I always enjoy reading commentary. And in many cases, I respond.
That's awesome, Damien. And for listeners who didn't quite catch all that, if you go to this episode's page on the podcast website, www.walkintheshadowlands.com, there will be links to where you can purchase the books, links to Damien's email. So don't worry that you missed out. Damien, thank you so much. It's been a very interesting conversation and certainly one that I'm going to mull over for some time.
Yes, it's been wonderful. I always enjoy doing podcasts and talking about the material that's in the book.
Awesome.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope this conversation with Damien has given you much to ponder and reflect upon as you navigate the mysteries of our world and beyond. And I want to thank Damien for his time and fulfilling his brief, as he would say. Please remember, my goal with this podcast is to share information and to open the door to questioning and understanding. What you choose to do in this knowledge is entirely up to you. Whether you want to further explore these topics or take a step back to process what you've heard, I respect your journey, and I strongly encourage you to listen to your intuition. For more resources and links to purchase The Last Harvest or connect with Damien Dumar, please visit our podcast website at www.walkintheshadowlands.com. As always, thank you for being a part of our community and for your continued support. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and leave us a review. Your feedback helps us bring more thought-provoking content to you. Consider becoming a supporter and helping me with the running costs of keeping this podcast on the air. You could buy me a coffee at www.buymeacoffee.com/walkintheshadowlands or become a monthly supporter. Any help, big or small, to keep our podcast up and running is appreciated. Don't forget to subscribe and share this episode with friends. And so you don't miss out on any episode, follow some teasers of our upcoming shows on any of these social media platforms. Our Facebook page, WT Shadowlands. Our Instagram feed, Walking the Shadowlands. TikTok under Walking_the_Shadowlands. Also, we have a YouTube channel under Walk in the Shadowlands as well. This podcast is available on all free podcasting platforms. Also, if you have Alexa, just say, open Walk in the Shadowlands and Alexa will play our latest episode for you. If you don't have a smartphone, don't worry. You can listen to the episodes from the podcast website, www.walkintheshadowlands.com. For those hearing impaired, there's a full written transcript of each episode on the website, so you don't miss out either.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Ka kite.